Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So maybe you saw Alice Randall's piece in the New York Times this weekend about African-American women and body image under the title Black Women and Fat. Randall wrote about her goal to be the, quote, last fat black woman in her family, end quote, and the cultural differences, as she sees them, between black fat and white fat, also a subject of that article. Many black women are fat because we want to be, she wrote. So, listeners, we are opening up the phones because I know a lot of you want to talk or talk back, in some cases, to Alice Randall, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. How did you read her message? How will you hear it when she begins to talk to us in a minute? You know her work, at least the one piece, The Wind Done Gone, that retelling of Gone with the Wind. From the black character's perspective, she's a writer in residence at Vanderbilt University and author of the new book, Ada's Rules. Thank you very much, Alice, for joining us on WNYC. Hello.
Brian, it's great to be with you.
You wrote about praying for fat thighs as a teenager and how your husband worried when you started losing weight. What's been your experience with obesity and weight?
Well, I read about praying for black, for large thighs as a little girl in Detroit and in the 60s. I was born in 59. Mm-hmm. My grandmother probably weighed near to 300 pounds. She was what we called biggest three houses. And I love my grandmother. And so I grew up wanting to be like her. And we perceived her as the most beautiful woman in our world. And my dancing teacher, who is a more fit but very large woman, I wanted to be like her. And so I think these are some of the unseen or little talked about complexities of how obesity works in the black community. What does it mean when the most beautiful woman in your world, a large black grandmother, is your role model, and how do you respect that woman and still architect change for your community so my daughter doesn't end up having that same problem or my granddaughter doesn't, looking at her grandmother and saying, I want to be like that. That's what strength and beauty look like.
And this idea that many black women are fat because we want to be, as you put it, how true do you think that actually is? And if so, why?
I think there is a truth in it, and I emphasize I use the word many. Fat obesity affluence affects 4 out of every 5 black women. This is are seriously overweight. So 4 out of 5, that is the majority. So many different roads to that condition. And one of the things I am trying to do is place this discussion in a cultural context. And the cultural context includes aesthetics, admiring people who are heavy. It includes sexual dynamics of maybe men who are interested in this, a subset, or it includes more important things I touch on, such as overwork and exhaustion of black women. It includes a history of abuse. It includes a history of being historically literally owned. And it also includes things such as the body as political expression and of the body as a site of political resistance. So I am saying there are many cultural phenomena, and some of them, many of them come to the good. Overweight black women have, in certain studies, I'm a novelist, so actually I want to just not go to studies. I want to go to what I've observed and what I've shared. Mm-hmm. I love my body. I have loved my body when it was over 225 pounds, and I have loved my body when it was 109 pounds. And I love, when I think of, I dedicated my new novel, Ada's Rules, to Fannie Lou Hamer and all the large black women who've carried more than their weight, more times have been acknowledged. It is the cultural difference. A part of the reason I'm a Harvard graduate, I'm the mother of a Harvard graduate. People, when I ask myself, how did I get to weigh 225 pounds? It's many things. One of them is my whole life works because I sleep only 5 hours a night. I work very hard. There are also women who have that same situation because they're domestic servants. They go out of their house before can't see in the morning to work in someone else's house and come home at the end of the day and work in their own houses. That being able to only sleep 4 and 5 hours a night, like many overworked black women do, that keeps us heavy, but that's also a choice we made. And I have to start making some choices, and I'm calling upon us all to look at our choices. Maybe I can't take care of everybody in my community if I'm doing it sometimes at the expense of myself. Maybe I have to figure out a way for me to figure out, sometimes at least, how to be able to sleep 7 hours a night or 8 hours a night. And so it's that's what I mean when it's a choice. Mm-hmm. Some of it's not just an aesthetic choice. Aesthetic choice is the one that many people have latched onto. And I certainly don't do anything related to my husband. I told my husband if I couldn't stay married to him and lose 30 pounds, I would be, and I adore him, I would be divorcing him. Mm-hmm. But it was a wonderful thing. His mother is a tall, large black woman who's weighed, you know, I won't say, you know, 16, 18, she's a size 16, 18. I'm sure she's been bigger than that, a size 20. So I love the fact that he thinks his mother is beautiful. And on an Oedipal Freudian way, he bonded with her, and he does not, you know, he did not bond with some tiny, thin woman. And so it's wonderful to me that my weight only exists in where I want it to be, but I want to note that there are complexities, and we cannot pathologize that, that there are choices are made, that we're not victims, although there are there is victimization, that there is a horrible abuse of all American culture in terms of marketing soft drinks and things, particularly to our poor communities, and these things play a role, but it's not the only role.
Alice Randall, she wrote that Sunday Review piece in the Times, Black Women and Fat, 212-433-WNYC. E, you're on the air. Hello, E.
Hi. Forgive me, I'm a bit nervous, but I did read that article on Sunday. And I guess I disagree. I think it's more socioeconomic than racial that it may explain the reasons why, in terms of there may be a larger percentage of black women than white women who may be obese. I say that because very few black women of color or I'll say people of color who may have, you know, higher income levels are obese. And it's sort of like, besides their income level, it's education and so forth. I mean, I've attended all kinds of schools, private schools, you know, public schools, Catholic schools. And one of the things I notice is that those, of course, who have, you know, who come from higher income levels, who are people of color, as well as the white students, they do not tend to be obese at all.
Right. And, I'm going to leave it there for time and get a response. True, right, Alice? Lower socioeconomic white women are heavier than, you know, higher socioeconomic white women as well?
Well, it's interesting that
on average.
First of all, in the white community, it is true that obesity is associated with poverty. But for one of the things, the wealthiest black woman in the world has had a very, very public weight challenge, Oprah Winfrey.
Yes.
And in fact, if you look at some of the most prominent black women, one of the things that I have looked at, and intuitively, I just say from my own Lynx group and other Lynx chapters I've been part of, who are some of the best educated, most powerful black women in America in terms of education and prosperity, because I think the power can also be in the bus driver, the domestic servant. We see very high, I see a lot of very large women. In fact, when I go to very privileged spaces with black women, too. Now, I think that some of it is an age difference, that younger black women who are have come up with in far more integrated environments. But in fact, in our communities, and it's something that has been acknowledged within many organizations with the most with successful black people in them, including the black ministers and preachers, but that actually that obesity is not just an issue of poverty. And for example, I am a lawyer, I'm a professor, and a highly functional woman who has excellent opportunities to eat well. In fact, I do very much eat well. I have never in my entire life, I don't eat store-bought cookies or fast food, and I got to be very heavy. So there are more details to it than that.
Let's take another.
And in fact, it's not just a connection to poverty, and that's what I wanted to bring light to.
Nicole in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hello, Nicole.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I agree with her a little bit, but I don't agree wholly. I'm a black woman. I have never been heavy in my life other than pregnancy. I do come from a semi-historical female background of our females being heavy. And I just made it a big, big effort in my life not to be that woman. I saw how upsetting it was mentally and physically for several members of my family when they were heavy with diabetes and trying to, you know, you're 200 and something pounds and trying to lose 10 pounds was such a strain. I do think that, at least in my family background, cooking had a lot to do with it and how to substitute one thing for another. I think that to eat well is more expensive, and that could be a problem in itself for anyone, black or white, to try to lose the weight. Also having access to a nice, safe area, like a park, for instance, to walk in, a reasonable gym to become a member. A lot of things play a part in one being heavy and staying heavy. I, in my heart, I don't believe that the majority of black women are comfortable being heavy. You know, I look at Star Jones after she had the surgery to lose the weight, and now she says how uncomfortable she was in her body. But when she was at the height of her weight, she was screaming to the world how fabulous she was.
Nicole, I'm going to leave it there for time and get a response. Alice?
Well, one, I have a practical program. And when people say that you can't, you need a gym and it's expensive, I call it the 888, and we talk about it in the novel, Eight is Rules. It's walk 8 miles a week. It's drink 8 glasses of water a day, which will help actually depress appetite. And it is sleep 8 hours each night. You can do your walking the 8 miles a week in your own apartment or house. We cannot make it. We have to save ourselves. Everybody, black, white, and green on this, that we can actually do it at home. The 888 will go a long way to having people lose the 10% of their body weight that often results in a 50% reduction in diabetes risk. It is right in our power. It's a specific thing. And that's why I want to cut to the chase. There are multiple reasons that we as a nation, America is suffering from an obesity problem, but it is hard, most hard-hitting black America. And the reason we have to look at this right now is obesity is fast overtaking smoking as the number one cause of preventable cancer death. With 4 out of 5 black women in America overweight, we will be facing a tsunami of new cancers that are preventable by walking 8 miles a week, drinking 8 glasses of water a day, and sleeping 8 hours a night. This is an emergency. It's also a $174 billion a year problem that will get to $1 trillion by 2030 if we don't change. We can debate about how women feel, and the answer is about being overweight. Some feel one way, some feel another. There's a wide variety of feelings. And in my op-ed, I was speaking as a novelist from my personal experience and from my family. I am extremely welcoming and interested in all the other voices. But what I don't think has been told is the voice of the middle-aged black woman, and the diabetes epidemic hits us hardest, where 1 out of 4 middle-aged black women has diabetes, how we feel about it, and whether we, what we like about it. For example, even when you say the caller said that she had women in her family who are large, part of what I'm saying is, even as you choose to be small, respect and love those other women and respect the choices they made and the work they did that might not have allowed them to go spend time at the gym while they were babysitting somebody in the neighborhood.
We're going to have to leave it there with Alice Randall. She wrote the op-ed piece in the Times over the weekend in Sunday Review entitled Black Women and Fat. There's a link to that on our website. She's a writer in residence at Vanderbilt University and the author of the new book, Eight is Rules, which I understand is described as a romance novel and a weight loss book in one, in 15 seconds. Can that be true?
Absolutely. It's about a black preacher's wife with 100 pounds to lose. I love Ada. When people read the novel, they will get the whole picture, and they can chime in on how we can shift the shape of the nation by shifting one body at a time into something that the woman possessing that body enjoys, whatever she decides.
Alice Randall, thank you so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you for letting me come on.
Finally today, you've probably learned this morning that Maurice Sendak has died. If you've ever read Where the Wild Things Are or In the Night Kitchen to a child, or if you were lucky enough to have them read you, to have them read to you by an adult, I'll bet you can conjure those illustrations right now, and I bet they make you smile. In tribute to the children's author from Brooklyn, we will go out today with the title track from Really Rosie, Maurice Sendak's 1975 musical. If you don't know, it's about a little girl from Brooklyn who spends a summer day corralling her playmates into producing a movie musical based on her life. And here it is, with book and lyrics by Maurice Sendak, sung by Carole King.